Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, I'm privileged to welcome a very, very accomplished banker, a senior director, an influential individual, and a fellow YPO member, Raman Sidhu, to our show. Raman, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashutosh. Good to be on the show.
Thank you. Raman is the CEO of EBG Federation India. He is a senior banker. He is a non-executive director of several companies, including BHEL, National Textile Corporations, and HSBC Securities and Capital Markets. He's a member of the core group of the Government of India to set up corporate governance norms for FIIs. And as I mentioned, he's a fellow YPO member. So Raman, tell me, what would you say are three key milestones in your life or your career?
Okay. Ashutosh, before I start, just a minor correction. I have been on the boards of BHEL, okay. India Infrastructure Finance, NHPC, etc., National Textile, but those were in the past. That's one correction. But getting on to key milestones, you said. That is actually a very subjective and a very not an easy question to answer, because you have to think back on your life and, you know, what are the things that really come immediately to mind. So take it as subjective, but I would say one of the most important things would be losing my guide, my mentor, very early on in life, my mother. She had a lot of influence on me. I was 21 years old when she died, passed away at the age of 43. Very young. And that actually is a milestone, because it completely changed what I had planned to do. I was a chartered accountant in England. I had got a job in Dubai with one of the big four accountancy firms, and I was all set to go. And that completely changed my mind, because I had a widow, a father back in India, and my sister also decided, she's no more again, decided to get married, and she said, it's your turn to look after him. So without giving too much thought to that, I changed my plans and said, I gave my regrets to the organization, and I came to India. That was the one major starting milestone, which actually influenced the way the business I would get into, because it was not going to be accountancy. That's why I treat that as a major milestone. I got into investment banking. The second one would be much later in life, in 1997, was the loss of my entire family in an accident. And that again influenced the way my future would go, because I was sitting on an offer to join a multinational bank, the same bank I was working with actually, but in London. And I had to abandon those plans, otherwise I may have been in the international circuit, but I had to then think of a career, whatever was left of it, back in India. And the third one, which is again, in fact, going back and not forward, was in 1987, another milestone, when I took a huge gamble of leaving an established bank in India. I was with Grinlays Bank, and at that time it was the biggest foreign bank in the country, and joining a representative office of a very major international bank, which was Barclays Bank PLC. I took the gamble, and that succeeded. That's why I think of it as a milestone, because it exposed me into an arena of creating a new organization, because they soon thereafter got the license to set up a banking business. So I started with a rep office, got that activated, got into setting up a bank, and you know, these opportunities don't come to everyone in the banking sector. Very few people get where you get a bird's eye view, whether it's one branch or two branches or 10 or 1,000 branches. It's a bank. So that overview and the setting up of all that, whether it's treasury operations, whether it's trade finance, whether setting up lines with financial institutions, with other banks, the whole gamut, hiring people from scratch for all these areas. Because that is what got me interested, and that is what went on to me participating in the creation of two other new organizations and the ramping up of business for another two.
Amazing.
So, you know, that fantastic. Was something which I enjoyed. So that's why.
That's fantastic. You know, and thank you for sharing these three milestones with us. So, you know, Raman, ever since I've known you, which has been for at least 2.5 decades, you've been associated with investment banking, financial services. My question to you is that over the last 3.5 decades, how have you seen the digital revolution coming into India? And do you think this is leading to financial inclusion?
Okay. The digital coming in into India has actually made a huge impact all across, because one of the things it did away with over a period was the natural interface that was there between two human beings, one representing yourself, one representing the bank, or one representing an institution and one representing the corporate bank. That was one of the first things. There are plus points about it, there are negative. There's efficiency, I guess, in digitalization, that you do away with human error angle. But it actually brought about a lot of things, and I'll go through it in no particular order. Mm-hmm. But in banking and quasi-banking, it improved the ease of doing business. Mm-hmm. Through, you know, today you have things like quick response code. The lower strata of society, particularly metros, mini metros, you know, the hawkers, the drivers, the maids, the families. This is again touching upon financial inclusion. Mm-hmm. It made life easier for them to actually conduct a form of banking operation or interface with the bank. In financial inclusion would also include, you know, things like government payment.
Correct.
Of subsidies through public financial management, the PFMS schemes. And that also led to more financial inclusion, which actually increased the accessibility and the ability for a large number of people in our country to reach banks more easily.
Okay.
With cash becoming preferred with middlemen. Now, this is the downside, which you know, the digitalization has also brought about.
Correct.
And the GST adding to it, we have recreated a parallel economy again, which demonetization had tried to finish off.
Correct. Well said.
Buying into digital channels, it actually made it easier to pay through cash. If you look at the figures, ATM replenishment today has gone up again. You know, it goes up and down like a seesaw to 95% in rural and in semi-rural areas.
Wow.
That again points to further financial inclusion. The people there are using it. In fact, farmers also have access to ATMs. Cash in circulation, CIC as you call it, has gone up nearly to, I think, 22% in 2020 from 11.8 in 2019. So it's touching about in excess of 3 trillion. Now, pandemic-induced precautions have also come in, which have partly offset what I just said, because suddenly cash has become king for a lot of people. So, you know, holding on to cash has come into the human thinking process.
So therefore, you know, Raman, my question to you is that, you know, if cash is coming back almost like with a vengeance into the economy, do you see us really moving towards a cashless economy, or will we be predominantly a cash-based economy?
In the Western developed world, things are very different.
Correct.
The way they are structured, the way the education system has actually infiltrated lower strata of society, etc., we don't have the same thing. So this will work, a cashless society to a great extent will work in the Western world, but even there, today cash still is there. Of course, a lot of transactions are done actually online. In India, I reckon there is still a very, very long way to go before we can say that we are actually effectively moving towards becoming a cashless society. I don't see it happening for the next 15 years at least.
Okay.
I mean, this is just my gut sense.
Okay. Fair enough. So, you know, as you look at your own life and your career, I mean, you know, I've always seen you, you know, at some of the, you know, talking to some of the senior most people in the world, in the country, across the world, and you interact with them, you know, at different levels. My question to you is that, given the multiplicity of relationships that you have built, what are some of your core values?
My core values, a lot of them, Ashutosh, were instilled by a person I referred to as my mentor, who I lost very early in life.
Mother, yeah.
Yeah. She built into me things like ambition. Hmm. I'll give you a very simple thing. She would occasionally indulge in me and then take that indulgence away for a short while and imbibe in me a thought process that, you know, if you actually want that to continue, you have to earn it. To earn it, you have to do well in life. Education was not a problem, fortunately for me, because I did quite well all through. And I don't think my parents had to move a finger in terms of, you know, my admissions, XYZ, anyway, including in UK when I went there. But ambition, she said, should be bridled. And one, for ambition to be bridled, I think what one must also learn to do is be very objective about yourself, your strengths, your weaknesses.
Okay.
I mean, if you do not recognize particularly weaknesses, then you may be actually chasing a wrong dream. And you may realize it too late in life. And then a lot of time would have been spent on it, and you would suffer mentally because of that. The other thing she built in me is that, you know, generally be helpful to people. I mean, my father taught me a lot on this also, because he used to go out of his way to help people who had harmed him also in life, which I think I would hold myself back from. But he did that. And he used to say that in life, if you actually are positive minded and you help people, even if 15-20% of them remember, it will go a very, very long life, and you will see it yourself over a period. The other thing between the two of them taught me was, do not harm anyone. You may have felt very hurt, throw it behind you and move on in life. Do not waste time, energy and your mental peace in chasing someone to harm that person. So I have tried assiduously to avoid it, even if my mind is working somewhere else. Correct. That's why I use the word assiduously.
Correct. Agree. So now let me move to another segment. You know, you sit on many, many boards, and you have sat on many boards. And over the years, you have seen the fiduciary responsibility for a non-executive board member is getting more and more and more stringent. My question to you is that, what do you look for before you accept a board position?
Okay. The reputation and standing of the company is paramount. The past reputation, the current reputation, what is the general view, the peer group view, peer group is very important of that company. The freedom they have in terms of, because I've been on public sector boards also, that's why I'm using the word freedom of exercising, you know, their decision making. Here I found, I've been on about 5 major public sector boards. I found that public sectors, one is, I've been a lot more comfortable with because of the numerous checks and balances that they have inbuilt into them. And that gave me a lot of comfort. So if a good one came across, I would be happy to actually take it forward. But that does not mean that I accepted all, because I had my limitations. Fortunately, because I was in investment banking for 70% of my career and 30% wholesale corporate banking earlier, the conflict issues that would come up for a banker were not there. I mean, in terms of, there was no lending, there's no direct business. So I used to get permission, but I didn't get permission each and every time. There were a few I had to give a buy, even though they were interesting companies. But one of the other things which I always give attention to is, am I learning something new? Today, I'm still on some boards, but none of them actually have any direct bearing on what I did most of my life.
Okay.
Whether investment banking or banking. You will see a lot of people who think they're very good because they spent 30, 34 years, 35 years in a sector, they can give solid advice. I have actually gone against that.
Okay.
And I've tried to learn about different sectors, whether it's hydel power, whether it's BHEL locomotives or thermal power, you know, equipment which produces right. power,
correct.
To textiles, to infrastructure for funding, which it's all been very different. To I was on the board of G4S for 7 years. Now that's guarding and manning for international okay. for housing finance, which I'd never done before.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, one of the things that is often spoken about a lot of companies in our part of the region is a lower level of transparency when it comes to boardrooms and governance. What do you think should be done to make our boardrooms much more, transparent?
Ashutosh, that's a very difficult one, because in more professional companies, I'm using the word loosely, there is a culture of it which helps in ensuring that. But if you do not have not been brought up yourself, I'm talking with the owners of the business or the chairmen and managing directors who are out looking for people to be on their boards, then that thing does not come that easily, because you have spent so much time, you've been molded like wax into a certain different style of thinking, and that does not go well. You asked me earlier, what are the kind of things, if there is a company where you hear about people getting an agenda just a day before, the independent directors and others, I would feel very worried about that.
I agree.
I would feel very much more positive about a company which actually encourages independent directors to have a look at their operations. You will find that there are very few. I used to go out of my way, including in the public sectors, to visit the plant, which for me was very important. You must know your business. You know, banks keep talking about KYC. I've actually been saying that unless you visit, so, you know, no one can throw you off in a board meeting by using technical jargon. Because if you've gone through tunnels, which have not yet been opened up, which take water to the power plant finally, and you wondered, you know, how does the water breathe while it's flowing through at such a high speed? There are technical terms, and when they get thrown at you, you say, yes, I know what you're talking about.
Very well said.
So okay. Any company which encourages that proactively is a safer company to be on.
Yeah, well said. So I'm going to now move to the third section, which is you as a YPO member. I have worked very closely with you as YPO members, and you know, you used to run the diplomacy series, I remember, for YPO members. I have two questions for you on this. Number one is, why did you join YPO? And why did you give back or agree to give back so much to YPO?
One of the things which I was also sort of, it was built into my mindset, was that you must network in your career. I found, as a family, we were fortunate that most of the old business houses in the country, one has access to, one has known them. I've also maintained the relationships
Correct.
There. But YPO actually was an opportunity to expose me to others in the business world, or younger generation of those families.
Correct.
You know, where you knew the elders, but you didn't know the youngsters. One of the things I always did was, if someone in life had been good to me, I mentioned earlier about, you know, being helpful. Equally, if someone was helpful to me when they were in a position of power, even when they were out of power, I have always kept holding their hand.
Okay.
And I've nurtured relationships. This was a different kind of relationship which I did not have an opportunity to nurture, but it came through YPO. And then you were the protagonist and the, don't forget, and the catalyst for getting me to do start the diplomatic series. Mm-hmm. And if you recall, it actually started in a small way, but we were able to cover practically every major country.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
By the end of it.
And absolutely. You know, it's an amazing organization, and I think you and I have both benefited a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, meeting new friends, getting to know other people, etc. So now let me move, Raman.
And sorry, sir, one other way. Education, which education and family values is another two other things which YPO focuses on, which I wanted to learn from others.
Mm, very interesting. So I'm now going to, I've got time for two, maybe three questions to you.
Okay.
And these are some questions for you personally.
Mm-hmm.
So Raman, you know, such an amazing career. You've had your own set of setbacks, you know, when you lost your mother, and then, you know, when you lost your family. As you look back at life, what does success mean to Raman?
Success is actually, I can't quantify it.
Mm-hmm.
If I have done something well, if I have had a target to achieve, if I have done that, I judge success not by the fact that I have actually closed a deal or I have reached my targets.
Mm.
I judge it by how I feel personally. Do I feel happy? Do I feel relaxed?
Mm.
Do I have a positive sense of feeling inside me?
Mm.
And if I have those three things, then I feel that yes, I have.
Mm.
Now, even if I have succeeded, I do question myself to just keep learning for the future, that did I produce high quality work and did I do it in time?
Okay.
And did my contributions positively impact my company, or I just met a target? Because just meeting a target is not enough. See whether there has been a recognition of that.
Mm.
So my definition of success centers around personal happiness and something that at least resembles it.
Mm. So I'm now going to come to my last question, you know, and this is a question, Raman, for the thousands of young people who will be listening to us and watching what you are saying.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just for your information, over 74% of the people who watch us and listen to us are below 34 years of age.
Okay.
So my question to you is that as a someone who has been there, done that, what would your advice be to a young individual who's starting off on their journey in life and in the corporate world?
Good question. The advice I would give will not probably come from a book, but would come from what I have learned over my working life. Now, this is again in no particular order, Ashutosh, but one of the things I think is very, very important is planning. Plan.
Mm.
Keep revisiting your plans. Do you feel that, you know, you have covered everything? Even then you may not, but planning is very, very critical for any youngster. And this is one area where a lot of youngsters actually don't give enough attention.
Correct.
The other thing in our country is time adherence. I give a lot of value to that. If you have an appointment, keep that appointment.
Mm.
Get there early.
Mm.
You know, do some work sitting just outside that office.
Mm.
But do not show up late and do not be in a position where you're preferring excuses.
Mm.
Our youngsters are very ambitious, as you and I have also seen. But again, something I said earlier, ground your ambition in reality.
Mm.
Again, something I've said earlier, which would be objectively assess your, I won't say strengths, I put it the other way around, your weaknesses and strengths.
Okay.
And weaknesses, making a subjective assessment personally is the most difficult or more difficult of the two.
Mm.
A lot of people in our country, particularly the younger lot, are not good listeners.
Okay.
It's even in the service industry, you would have been in a five-star hotel, and sometimes, you know, before you can tell the chap what you want to order, he's already making suggestions.
Correct.
And the person may be completely off track. So be patient, listen, and you will probably remain on the right track if you listen, because you will absorb what is being actually asked of, and you will not go off track.
Very well said.
Don't harm people, waste of time. It's negative energy, it's wasting mental peace. So don't do that, and don't be too judgmental. Put yourself in the other person's shoes. If you feel that a person, initially you feel, is being just awkward with you in a situation, just step back and say, if I was this person, what would I have done? And sometimes, you know, you get the right answer, which you would not have if you just allow your, at that point in time, your mind, what is showing up, to guide you.
Very nice. Raman, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure and privilege speaking to you. You know, I look forward to keeping in touch, and I'm sure I wish you lots of success in everything that you're doing.
Thank you very much, Ashutosh. It's been a pleasure, as always, to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.